I'm Jan Suk Fong Lee.
And I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And this is Can't Lit. Do, Can't Lit. Talk
about books and stuff. Hello, and welcome back to Can't Lit, the podcast with me, Dina. Also, we have Jen.
Hi.
Hi. How's Rosie?
Rosie is here. She's supervising. She's in charge of morale.
That's usually what she's in charge of. And I approve.
She's good at it.
She is very good at it. I miss Rosie. I haven't seen Rosie since February.
Oh, she misses you too. She's really, her world has really shrunk quite a lot in terms of the people she gets to see. And I think she does miss her very special friends. Dina being one of Rosie's very special friends. Sean Cranberry being her very special enemy.
Okay, I was going to ask, does Rosie have any new enemies?
New ones? No, but there is a fellow who lives in my building who she's never really liked. But for the most part, the people that she didn't really take to in my building, she's mostly stopped barking at because she's lived with me for 2 years now. But except for this guy, she has not stopped barking at him. And I was like, why? What is it about that guy? And then a few weeks ago, I was walking by his front window and I looked in and he was having a party. And when they saw me walking by, they closed the blinds. And I'm like, see, Rosie knows. Rosie knows when you're a garbage human.
They right? closed the blinds?
Yeah, because they saw me.
Rosie fucking knew from the beginning.
Yeah, she knew he was a garbage person.
She knew. She knew.
Yeah.
Well, this person sucks. So.
And she was barking at him so that I wouldn't get close and then we won't get COVID.
Don't. Yeah. I literally love parties and love having parties. And
oh, same.
I think these people don't love parties that much. And that actually hurts me even more to just to know, you know, those parties are not even good.
I don't know how good it was. They were definitely playing video games in there. Which, you know, neither here nor there, but also not my jam.
I got to be honest, that doesn't sound like a party.
No, but there are a lot of people in there. You know, our places are small, like you know, Dina. So,
and yeah.
His place is even smaller than mine. It's a ground level suite.
I'm aware. Anyway, yeah. I just know that everyone that's hosting parties is having really shitty parties, and that only adds to my ire.
So Dina and Rosie are in agreement. Yeah. As always.
As always, we are one soul in agreement about this situation. But that's not what we came here to talk about today.
No.
Today, we're going to talk about writing in the year of 2020.
Almost over, though.
Yeah, it's coming to a close. This will come to you on the last day of November. Or November, as I like to call it.
Worst month of the year, honestly.
It's a very stressful month. Well, I think normally, you know, we would be going to events or preparing for some kind of holiday festivities. So you feel a little bit of adrenaline.
Yeah.
Not now. 0%.
I was actually just thinking normally during the fall, you and I would be quite busy with like events. And then by November, we need a rest, but then you have to gear up for holiday for December.
Yeah,
so exactly. November was bearable before. Not
yeah. November was bearable before. You would have, you know, try and take a welcome break from the rest of the things that were going on.
Yep.
But now nothing feels like a break, even though you're not doing stuff.
Nope, everything is just the same old flatlining slog.
I'm drinking this fennel tea and it smells super strong. And honestly, I'm into it. So I'm going to try not to take any gulps on the mic, but it's pretty tasty.
Gulp away. So we're going to talk about writing in 2020.
Yeah, we're going to talk about writing in the year of COVID. So Jen, how are you feeling about writing right now?
I've been writing a lot, but I want to just qualify that. I'm writing a lot because I had all these sort of like contracts and stuff that had were negotiated years ago, and you know I'm fulfilling them as a responsible person does. But I also I wrote down on my notes here that writing for me is not about writing about what my current reality is. This is why I don't really journal. I try to journal every once in a while, and it's terrible. I hate it. I only write about things that distract me from my current reality, even if I'm writing a memoir, because I can write about things that happened before. And without the writing, I think I would be too immersed in what's going on in the world. And I think I would despair more if I didn't write. What about you, Dina?
I feel similarly. Like, I feel fine about writing right now. I mean, I see a lot of people not feeling fine about it, and I very much understand that. I think mm-hmm. the pressure to write for some people is likely very high. I don't feel that for myself, but I understand it. And I also understand, you know, why people are not writing, and that 100% is fine and very, very, oh, yeah. very valid and, like, no pressure. But I am writing, and... I think, again, I feel okay about it partially because I don't depend on writing to live. Mm-hmm. Like, my income is not tied to it in a way where if I didn't do it, you know, it would become a stressful thing if I was unable to do it or mm-hmm. I was, you know, feeling pressure. So, yeah, I rarely have deadlines. And if I write, it's for my own projects and it's not directly connected to anything external. Like, no one is coming for me to be like, "Where's that thing?"
I can do that for you if you want.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem to affect me. Like, if I want to be writing or I can be writing, I am. And I've talked on the podcast before about taking long breaks from writing, and that's perfectly acceptable and fine and good. And there are lots of valid reasons why you should do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, after Oscar was born, I didn't write for 2 years, and I 100% needed that break.
And I think people need breaks after they finish projects. And I think there's nobody should feel like they have to be doing that right now. I guess in terms of writing, I do kind of worry about that my lack of human contact with people might be making me a worse, kind of more insular, less nuanced writer, to be honest. Like, that's my current fear.
Except I've been writing in an insular space for many years, and has my writing suffered for it? I don't know.
No, you're a different kind of writer in a lot of ways than I am. And I don't know. There's just part of me where it's just like, am I just writing the meanest stuff because I'm so pent up that I'm just like constantly writing nightmare rants or like secretly couching every single emotion into this one sentence?
You know, maybe.
Anyway, it is possible.
I will say that I was talking to when I hosted a Vancouver Writers Fest event on the Zoom and the YouTubes with some really great novelists, Megha Majumdar, Charles Yu, and Kavai Strong Washburn. All great, lovely, such great novels. Charles Yu just won the National Book Award for Interior Chinatown. But it was a question I had asked them, like, are you writing right now? What does it feel necessary to write right now? Or are you unable to write? You know, like, and that's like a really like, and they all had different answers with that. You know, I think it was Kavai who said he's not really writing because his children are home and he has to do all this other stuff and he has a day job. And then Charles was saying, if I didn't write, I don't know what else I would be doing. And then Megha said she feels compelled to write because the world is sort of pressing in on her and she wants to write about it. I said three very different answers, and all three equally valid and totally understandable.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I completely agree. Like, I was just going to ask you, not exactly the same question, but kind of coming off that first question and then this point you just made, talking to these writers at the Writers Fest event, how does it feel different for you, if it does feel different to you at all? Like, is there any type of discernible difference to you writing this year as compared to other times? And I think often it is different, like different projects are different, et cetera, but just curious.
I think the one thing that has changed quite significantly for me is that my voice has changed a lot. I mean, you know, to external people, like to as opposed to the people inside my head, to the people outside of my head, it might not even be, it might not even be noticeable. But like I, for me anyway, it feels like there's been a really significant shift in tone in the last 6 months. And that I am less concerned with making things really pretty, and I am more concerned, more likely to be really direct in my writing now, which I was never really before. Everything I was writing was kind of oblique or like, you know, hidden by various layers of opacity. But like, I'm not really doing that anymore. And I think it's a kind of an interesting thing. And I think it's related to COVID, like just not giving a shit. Like it doesn't matter. Like what, who cares? I can be as direct as I want. I want people to get my point. But it's also like, I think a function of me aging. Like I'm in that time of life where I should be writing something like Eat, Pray, Love and really not giving a shit, right? Like having an affair with like some handsome Italian guy over a plate of meatballs. Like it's, and like just being like, I don't care. And it doesn't matter. Everything falls away. Perceptions, who cares? But I think it is. And so instead of doing what I just said with the meatballs, I'm doing it in my writing. But it's a weird, I just wrote something couple of days ago when I'm in revisions for the memoir and I just wrote some new stuff and it was so direct and it, like 25-year-old me would have been really, really afraid of that, I think. What's changed for you though over this time?
I feel similarly in terms of I actually even think over the year it's changed. Like I think earlier this year, no, that's not true. I don't know. I think overall like I wrote something the other day, I'm working on a lot of first drafts. But then also some things are in more developed stages. And I just looked at this huge draft that I'm working on. And I was like, this is so messy. I love it. Mm-hmm. Like it's just a big mess and I'm just writing it in the messiest way possible. And it's really good.
I love messy writing. That. Yeah,
like
I love it.
It's really good to just do that. And I agree with you in terms of the directness. Like I feel like my brain is focusing in on things in a different way. So yes, there is a messiness, but I think the messiness is kind of writing around a point mm-hmm. instead of, I think, an idea, which I think I did a lot of, again, you know, in my earlier writing experiments, which is fun. And I also just think for me, like it's a very, I don't know, I don't want to go so far as to say life-saving, but I can control it. I can do it. It's something I do when I'm alone regularly. So to be doing it feels like a regular activity. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a level of grounding with it as opposed to other things that I would do with other people or it is like, it's also a distraction from other parts of my life personally, and just the greater tragedies of the world. Like I can dwell on these ridiculous characters for a bit and I can mess around with them, you know, as a treat. And, yeah.
Do you feel like there's some kind of social need being filled if you're, engaging with characters?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Same.
Like I'm immersed in them. Like I'm either like performing as them or I'm considering them or the, you know, I've talked about this a little bit, but like I'm writing a ton of dialogue and I'm worried that this book is just becoming this dialogue monster. And then
nothing wrong with that.
I know. It's this weird self-doubt, but it's because I'm writing all these characters that are, they're not, as I said to Jen the other day via text, I was like, I'm not writing these strong, silent types. Like these are not that type of character. So they have to be talking. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm engaged in conversation with these characters.
I mean, it's kind of satisfying. I mean, it's not as satisfying as like, you know, being, you know, wall to wall at a writer's festival party and, you know, your back is to Dion Brand because you're afraid to turn around and say hello for like 45 minutes. I'm not saying I did that, but maybe I did.
And I'm not saying that I stood beside Jen and also did that, but I'm just saying that maybe it happened. Who knows?
I have been very close. I may have been very close to Dion Brand, was too afraid to say hello because I love her so much. I'm writing the novel, but I've had to put it away for a bit because I'm in revisions for the memoir. And I found that with both of those projects, I was so engaged with the people in the stories. Like, and in the novel, it's like they're all fictional, and in the memoir, they're people from my life. But it's kind of really satisfying in a way. And I mean, in the memoir, I write a lot about my dad, who died in like 1988, and it's kind of a nice, although slightly creepy, resurrection.
I don't think it's creepy. I mean, even if it is creepy, it's fine.
I mean, he's my dad. I feel like I'm allowed.
Yeah.
He's your dad. He's my dad. So, you know, probably would have been the only one of my parents who would have read any of my books or wanted to.
Yeah.
So that's the, so it's kind of a funny, like, thing. I don't know, like, are you doing any writing that relates to the present moment? Because I am really, truly not currently.
No. A little bit of the poetry manuscript, this long poem, has some of it in there, but it's really more focused on other things. It's just that some of those things relate. Hmm. So there's, it's very slight. And it's a much more like personal autobiographical poetry than usual for me, in a way where I'm not like, again, hiding all my bullshit and some other stuff that is, you know, about me, but not about me, or about my thoughts, feelings, ideas, whatever. And so there is a bit of that in there, but for the most part, no. And because that book, I'm really writing a lot about television, and I've been rewatching shows. So there is a connection, but it's not necessarily like, and I talk about rewatching and the act of rewatching. So it's in there, but it's not necessarily very direct, or I'm not writing about like, we are in a pandemic.
I wouldn't expect you to write that. I mean, you could if you wanted. It doesn't matter, but I wouldn't expect it of you.
Yeah, like it's not really about this time as much as it is about like what I'm doing. I don't know.
One of the essays in my memoir is about being expected to be a tour guide for the West to help people in the West understand China, because China is really misunderstood or barely understood at all in the West. And COVID has made that abundantly clear. And, but it's about COVID in a sense, but it's actually really not. It's also about like the cycles of like what people think China is and how that changes, and also how it also stays the same. And mostly for research for that essay, I've just been watching, Awkwafina is Nora from Queens.
I mean, sometimes that's what you need to be doing.
Like, why isn't B.D. Wong my dad? Like, why?
Oh, I mean, excellent question. Your dad is still your dad, but you can have also B.D. Wong as
B.D. Wong in Nora from Queens is a lot like my dad.
That's so like, funny.
I like it's, and I didn't ever think like my dad was not like, there are archetypes of see, this is why this is interesting to me, but there are like archetypes of like Chinese characters in popular culture. And the type of dad that my dad was and the type of dad that B.D. Wong is in Nora from Queens is not an archetype. It's not. They're quite different from the way we think of as Chinese dads. So anyway, it's just really gratifying for me to see that. That's part of the essay too.
Yeah. I mean, I've been tweeting about it a lot, but I just watched Sopranos. And I feel weirdly similarly, like, even though it's not at all like my experience growing up not super wealthy and connected to crime in a small town in British Columbia and not a gigantic mansion in Jersey. But there were some like cultural similarities that I actually felt were helpful in terms of the way that I was kind of exploring stuff in this novel. And some of it was because it was so opposite of what I was trying to do.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like, and so I think I when you watch the opposite, it throws into relief the thing that you are engaged in or
totally,
or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like I think like in, like for example, like in Nora from Queens, because it's the only thing I watch, is Grandma is like My mom's not like that at all. Like, this grandma yells, drops so many F-bombs in an episode. Like, you can't. And then, I mean, and then she starts like an inter-Asian race war with a bunch of Korean ladies in like a mall. And I'm like, this is like the best show ever.
Wait, your mom's not doing that at the casino?
I don't think so, because I think, well, when she went to the casino before, she was mostly buying beers for Daniel Zamparelli's dad. I mean,
that is a rumor that we started and will maintain forever.
I hope it's true. I've never actually asked her. Maybe I should. I mean,
I'd love to know.
My mom does flirt, and as I like to say, I got my game from somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely got it from your mom.
Yeah, of course. You know.
Well, I mean, I've also been thinking about the place of the writer, the creator, whatever we want to call it, the artist, right now. Mm. And I don't know, I kind of had two longer points, but one thing that I was thinking about the other day, I was in the shower and I remembered a few years ago, I was with my family and a family member, not an immediate family member, was talking about another person in our family who was also an artistic person who has pursued that as a career. And, this person, and you know, didn't have some big, shiny, famous career. Neither do I. And, this person said, that's why you have a job and you do art as a hobby. And I was just like, ugh, no, nope. Like, this is not what I want to hear. That's so missing the point. But I don't know, that's the thing. Like, art to so many people is not worth anything, or they consider it not worth anything. The perception that art is worthless is way more common than we consider in our very artsy lives or circles, or that art, mm-hmm. writing, music shouldn't be worth anything, certainly not money. And then also the way capitalism and white supremacy kind of push these oppressive paradigms about what is important and worthy onto us. And that doesn't include art. Like, the fucking stock market is a scam, and somehow that's worth like everything. And we get to keep perpetuating this nightmare. Like, instead of getting, you know, beautiful paintings or cool movies or album, whatever it is, like, I don't know. And if people aren't famous for their work, it's not worth anything. Like, mm-hmm. so I don't know, just feeling a lot of trash feelings about this particular subject.
I'm
just thinking about it too, like alongside the fact that I might likelihood that I might have to, you know, find new regular work. And like, this is why I always had a regular job. I've never tried to just be a writer. I've never given up or quit to just pursue my art.
Yeah.
Because working a regular job and having, you know, benefits and stability and all these things is so ingrained in society and this bootstrap culture that I feel like I have to do that.
Rosie, so writing agreed.
Fits in somewhere. Yeah, she gets it. And art has to just fit into all these other parts of your life. It's not like what a person is allowed to do full time, even though that's garbage.
It's, I don't really write full time, but I think I write more full time than most people. And for a lot of reasons, I'm in a position now where I'm not going to say I get paid adequately, but I get paid enough to eat.
You don't get paid adequately. I will say it.
No, but I get paid enough to eat and take care of my kid and like, you know, pay for my home. But what, I think, you know, most of my life, and this is the one thing that the pandemic has made really difficult for me, is that my life at home is not, there aren't really any writers around me. There aren't. Like, I just, you know, there's, well, other than Oscar, because Oscar's a pretty good writer. But, like, there's Oscar.
Agreed. And that's it. He is very yes. talented.
He's very talented. But most of the people I see, like, and when I say I see people, meaning when you say hello to people at the dog park or when you're dropping off your kid at school, or whatever, and you have a little bit of a conversation, none of those people are writers. And what I've been really missing is the conversation that you can have with other artists about these things. And part of the reason I miss that is that the question that I get most often is, do you actually get paid to write? I get that question all the time. And it's such a difficult question to even answer, because what I get paid for to write is not enough to sustain me if I didn't have all those other gigs, but I wouldn't have the other gigs if I didn't write.
Yes, exactly.
And they're all, and they're all related to writing. So it's less that I have separate jobs. It's more that I have, interrelated jobs, or all exists within the same little circle. And they're all related, and they either feed each other, or they might, you know, deplete from one, or one role might deplete from the other too. I mean, that happens also, but like, I just think I don't want to answer that question anymore, basically, is what I'm saying.
Like, it's super offensive. You don't go up to someone who, like, I don't know, is an accountant and ask them if they get paid.
You know, one time I got so annoyed. I was so annoyed with this question, and I hadn't really seen any other writers in a long time. And I just said, you know what happens? I write the books, people buy them, and I get the money, okay?
Really offensive to just think of how every other industry is allowed to operate without these parameters. That's not every other industry, but like, a lot of creative industries are not allowed to operate. And like, look who we constantly bail out. Like, all sorts of terrible industries that don't deserve money, that abuse that.
Yeah, it's
the airline industry. Look at the energy sector. Like, it's extremely offensive. It doesn't mean that we don't need those services, but like, they've never really been put in a position to, you know, like, the market price for our writing is always going to be low, and that's fucking sorry.
Yes, and then the thing about the airline industry and like the tourism industry in general is, like, when people complain that they don't get to travel anywhere now, and I'm like, have you ever asked yourself what tourism does? Like, what does it actually signify, and who it benefits? Like, do you even think about, like, what it seems, what you're doing? You're consuming a culture for your own benefit so that you feel better about yourself. Like, I'm not saying that traveling isn't fun. That's not my point at all. Of course it's fun. Vacations are needed, and it's nice to go somewhere else for a while. But like, get right down to it. Like, you know, it's really just a happy veneer for white supremacy. Let's just be honest.
No, I mean, I'm definitely like not disagreeing with you. I also am a person who, as an adult, has never just gone on a vacation for, like, I've never gone to a resort. I've never done that. I've only ever really, also for many years, I have had unpaid vacations because I worked, you know, hourly paid jobs where I didn't get vacation pay. And so I either had to save up money or, like, you know, figure out a way to be able to take a vacation. But every time I take a vacation, the only vacations I take are book tour. Is that a vacation? No. Or if I'm visiting people, like, that's it. I've never just been like, I'm going to go to Vegas, or I'm going to go to Europe. Like, I've not done those things.
I've never done those things unless I was planning it for 2 years ahead of time.
And like, most honestly, of it is because partially, like, part of me just feels like I only want to go on vacations if it also involves me seeing people that I love. Like, it's whatever. It's fine.
It's one of my dreams, Tina.
Cheesy little baby.
It's one of my dreams to retire in Asia. I've narrowed it down to about 3 countries, but I haven't figured it out yet. But when I do, you can come visit me, and it'll be lovely. Okay. Yeah.
I'll be living on a shed on like Salt Spring or something.
No, you can live in my nice beach villa in somewhere.
Okay, cool. I also was thinking about like another thing that we do. Which is, you know, both of us also teach. Mm-hmm. And there was this thread on Twitter from Hannah McGregor, who had been on CBC. Did you see this? Talking about burnout for instructors and students. And yeah. And of course, because I am just a little garbage baby, I had to read the comments because...
Oh, did you? Were they bad?
Yeah, they were terrible. And it was similar to this other comment from this person in my family where I was just like, people do not value education or educators, or they don't care. They don't care that these are people like them doing jobs. Their expectation of them is so absurd. Like, just so much of that, you know,
What were they saying?
There was a lot of comments about, like, why do these people get to complain? Everyone's fine. People are adaptable. They'll figure it out. So just, like, absolutely no nuance to the conversation. And, of course, people love to just say that educators are lazy and they don't really have to do anything hard. And I don't know, like, they just think everyone should not feel the stress of this moment and just push through. In general, I think the people that are making these types of comments and mm-hmm. I don't know, everyone just deserves more real space for what actually nourishes them and also to go through whatever they're going through right now. And it's not weak to want to not hate your job or your life, like, which is essentially what these people were saying. They're like, if you hate your job so much, why don't you quit? It's like, I don't know. Ugh. Why don't you quit your job? Like, I don't know. The comments are just so familiar.
Why don't you, like, just shut your mouth?
Yeah. Like, yeah, I don't know. These whiners just can't take the heat. Like, but these people are working really fucking hard. Like, nobody knows what it's like. I don't know. All these people looking at spreadsheets all fucking day are going to comment on my job and your job. And, like, also, I work in retail. I know what people think of service workers or anyone that is doing a service. Like, they don't fucking like it. They don't fucking care or think that you're human.
I think the not thinking that you're human, the educator thing, I will say one thing about that, and that is that I've been teaching online for a long time now. And this year, for sure, the students' need for connecting with me as a teacher, way higher, double what it ever was before. And I think that's because people are not doing anything else. Like, this is the program that they choose to take with me at the Writer Studio is what they're doing for everything, for socialization, for education, for affirmation, for reassurance, all of that. And then they really seem to need me, and I assume the other instructors also, more than they've ever needed me before. And I completely understand it, and this is not their fault by any stretch, but I am really tired. And it's hard to, like, when you're in a student meeting, it's hard not to feel like your energy is really low after someone's been asking you question after question and you keep answering, and it's all about their needs. And I realize it's our job, but I also realize that I am trying to be better about managing it. Like, if I have one of those student meetings, I have to know that I'm basically useless for at least an hour afterward. Like, I can't, there's nothing else I can be doing. So yeah, that thread that Hannah McGregor wrote is very real. And I do think that, especially if you're teaching writing, where student engagement is higher than if you were, say, lecturing, you know, 200 students in, like, microbiology or something, where they actually want to talk to you and they tell you their feelings, the burnout is very real.
And also, just, I want to extend this to other people. Like, I don't think other people who are working other types of jobs are not experiencing this. They are.
Oh, of course they are.
And yeah, I don't know, just that dismissive nature, there's something about it that just, it grates on me. It's like this conversation about student loan debt and all of these people who don't think we should cancel student loan debt because they paid theirs off. And it's like, yeah, I guess. Oh, I don't have this. There was someone else who had tweeted, like, if I die of COVID, don't make a vaccine. Make sure that my legacy is everyone suffering, or something along those lines. And I was like, yeah, it's the same thing. Like, this is very funny. It's very funny to think that just because you were able to have whatever it is that you have, that other people don't deserve a goddamn break.
Well, that's the way capitalism.
Of course it is. Exactly.
And Western individuation has fucked us up, though, right? Like, and this is something actually that I write about in my essay about China, because, like, individualism is a very Western concept. And, like, you know, part of what, you know, someone like me has to learn is that at home, it's about the, you know, collective unit and doing good for everybody. And out in the world, I'm supposed to be, like, I don't know, fucking Melanie Griffith and Working Girl or something. And, like, that distinct split makes me really sort of angry, because I do see there's so many failures with the idea of individuation. And, like, I am going to only look out for myself, for my children, and that's it. That's all I'm doing. all I'm doing. I am going to accumulate all the wealth I can. I'm going to keep everything I inherit, and I'm going to only pass it on to my children. I'm like, you know what? You guys suck balls.
Yeah. It's bullshit. And it's these arguments that people who are asking for whatever it is, student loan remittance, or for people to get better healthcare. It's like, or people who are talking about burnout, people are looking at that as, yes, a monolith of people working in a particular job sector, but also at those individuals, like those individual people can't handle it. Those individual people can't handle it, and acting like it's a selfish thing when it's the complete opposite. Like the people making these comments are the ones who are selfish.
Yeah, because they're trying,
they're throwing that back on to these other groups of people. Because I think they just don't understand words, which is why writing is important.
Oh god! Like, if I said, I gotta say, man, like for the most part, like if I walked around saying this is the problem with capitalism and Western individuation to like 99% of the people, like they would just be mad at me or not care.
Yes, the anger about this, about upholding this bullshit, is also tiring. It's tiring for people to constantly be told that their ideas are bad and harmful. And you're like, no, it's your ideas are bad. Like your ideas are actually harming people. It's like, nope, yours are.
It's
you want
shocking.
People to have stuff? Okay, fine, I guess. Why don't we just let them die?
It's shocking to me how people...
We're in a death cult.
It's just shocking to me how they will hold on to the whatever amount of privilege that they have with a goddamn death grip. Like, it just... You know what? Whatever. Like, you can just suck ass in your big ass house and cry yourself to sleep on a bed of $100 bills. I don't know if I care anymore. Like, no. I do care. I want that. I want some money. But like, I don't know. Yeah. I'd really like to.
I mean, whatever.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Maybe I just want to get paid fairly for my work.
Yeah, I mean, I think people deserve to be paid fairly
for
what they do. But the system by which we measure worth is fucking destroyed. And yeah, it's not helping.
Rosie is actually barking at her own tail and chewing it. And I feel like this is a metaphor for privilege.
I love that for her. And for us to be able to enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jen, do you have any other questions?
You know.
Okay. Do you have any final words?
I wrote here, I'm too tired to even think straight. That's literally one of my notes. you know, I think it's just... I think writing in this time is good if you can do it and you want to do it. And please don't force yourself to do it if you don't want to or can't. And that's okay.
Yeah. Also, I want people. Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Also, one of my hot tips for feeling better about stuff is rereading a favorite book, a really book you've read many times. That really helps me feel better.
Oh, that's good. What is that book for you? Or what is an example of a book that's like that for you?
Okay. The one that I just reread was Possession by A.S. Byatt.
Oh, and you then, love Possession.
I love that book. I read that book like 1,000 times. And then The Blue Castle by Lucy Maud Montgomery.
Oh, wow. All right. I love this. No, it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other one I read is Kitchen Confidential by Anthony Bourdain. Yeah. Those are the three
Amazing.
I read.
They're
very comforting.
Okay. I love that.
What about you?
I don't think I have any rereads that I should start doing that.
You should try. It's
I'm
really
much
soothing.
I'm like a rewatcher or obsessively listening to a song person.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, everyone knows this fall and end of summer, it's really been a hardcore Fleetwood Mac, Silver Springs time for me. Mm. but then, of course, you know, always Bob Seger in my back pocket, just in case I need that guy. but I agree with you. Like, I want people to not feel like they have to write or be productive right now, or that their worth is attached to that. I personally find it calming because I am bad at relaxing. Like I basically have to do 1,000-piece puzzle a week to calm my brain.
That's a good activity.
Yeah. And like I really was trying to do non-screen based activities. So I wasn't scrolling all the time. And I started it a couple years ago and now I'm very glad that I did and that it works. Like I could have just not enjoyed puzzles. And reading too, though, I really feel like I have been reading less this year than usual.
Which, I think everyone has though, to be honest.
Yeah. It's hard. But I just got my Rahila's Ghost Press chapbooks. I'm very excited to read all of those.
I just started reading. I don't know if anyone wants to know what we're reading right now, but I just started reading A History of My Brief Body by Billy Ray Belcourt.
If you're listening, please come on the podcast.
Billy Ray, can you come on the podcast? And I feel like there are friends of the podcast and former guests who have a direct line to Billy Ray. So also just let them know.
It will be great. I just read The Meaning of Mariah Carey. So that was the last book I read. And it was great. It was really great.
I love her so much. She's so...
I feel like, Jen, you should get the audiobook. I feel like she reads it and I think that might be a better thing.
Does she read it?
Yeah.
Does she do it?
No, she reads it. Yeah. So I feel like that would be a good activity for you to enjoy.
I mean, I'm still decompressing from the Robin Crawford book she wrote about Whitney Houston.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
I got that for Christmas last Christmas. And it's actually, I should reread that because that was just great. See, Rosie is like, reread the Whitney book, Jen.
Yeah. I mean, I got some books, you know, that I plan on reading.
They're sitting there.
Yeah. You know what, though? I've been pretty good about only buying or getting books that I'm going to read imminently. I probably only have like 3 or 4 in my to-read stack, which is pretty good.
I'm in I think we're both in the fortunate position, too, that people just send us books.
I haven't really gotten any for a couple months. So if you were considering sending some books to me, I would really appreciate it.
I've got a couple I still have to get to.
I got a couple of good ones, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's good. Also, you know, in thinking about this, like, whole conversation, there was another tweet that I retweeted maybe last week, I don't know, recently, from somebody that I don't know, @CableKnitJumper. But the tweet was, I feel like people expect to be inundated with prestige TV, neat clothes, miraculous novels that took 12 years to write, movies that are lush and vital and life-affirming, but no one wants to fund the arts. And thinking about all the stuff that, you know, we're expected to do with our time that is quote-unquote free, I'm using scare quotes, to make these things, when so few people hold the funding, the money, for things to be produced. And we know people that work in other industries. We know people that work in film. Mm-hmm. We know people that work in TV. We know people that are musicians. And we know people who work in theater who right now, you know, or comedians who can't do their jobs. Like, that's how they make money. Mm-hmm. So when I hear people, I don't know, I'm just being such a real little rat bastard when I hear people complaining about working from home, when I'm like, you can do your job still. Like, I'm not saying that it's easy or great or whatever, but your livelihood hasn't completely been taken away from you. And that's a big deal.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, 2 of my books got pushed ahead because of COVID.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be coming out. They are going to be out in the spring. I still don't know if we're going to be able to do any in-person promotion for those books. I'm thinking probably not, but we'll see. It's just been, you know, I'm very fortunate in the sense that like my teaching job has stayed the same more or less. And that like, I'm still getting paid to do other stuff, but like, it's just, you know, I think about, yeah, like film, television, theater, visual art, dancers. What are the dancers doing?
I hope they're okay.
Yeah.
I mean, and then we're all also being asked to be like the tech people also are losing their jobs that, you know, do. And when I say tech, I mean like the techies that are at theaters or these other art spaces. And and now we all have to become our own techs, which is also so messed up.
I mean, I've done a lot of like, yeah, you know, in my job at the Writer Studio, part of my job is like when students have problems to help them with their tech. I am not a tech person by training or trade. So there's been a lot of times where I'm like, I don't know what the problem is. And I'm like, oh, all I had to do was scroll down the page.
Yeah, for sure. But like people are setting up elaborate, you know, studios in their homes or ring lights and backdrops so they can probably do virtual dance performances, and DJs are DJing from their homes. And it's.
But the amount of extra labor it's extra labor.
But people really are trying because obviously people want some art in their eyes, ears, and their hearts.
So pay for your art. unless it's pirating somebody else's Disney Plus account, in which case I don't care.
I agree. If anyone would like to give me a Disney Plus password, I would appreciate it.
But
come on. Yeah. I just want to like hang out, maybe watch Mary Poppins. I don't know.
I mean, I might have someone's Disney Plus password. I might.
Okay. Cool. interesting development at the end of this podcast. Well, thanks for listening. Jen, great to talk to you about this. I hope that these episodes aren't too much of a downer. I feel like we're trying our best to be our amusing selves.
I mean, we're trying.
Some information that may or may not be useful.
Here's something for you. I was dancing in my living room the other night because I'd had a couple shots of whiskey to Weezer's cover of No Scrubs by TLC.
Wow. And
I highly recommend because it's the silliest thing you've ever heard.
That's great. I mean, so maybe next time Jen and I will go Instagram live and we'll just I'll narrate this and it'll be super fun. All right. Thanks for listening. Jen, you're great.
You're great.
Rosie, you're great too. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye.